Now, most cities around the world are unplanned. They're almost organic creations. What started as a village is now Rome, London, New York, even Sydney. And each of them have centuries of development and redevelopment. And gradually, each city's character has been formed and continues to develop. Occasionally, though, a city is conceived from scratch. And this was the case with our national capital, Canberra. In the panel this week, we're looking forward to the centenary of Canberra, which will be celebrated in all kinds of ways in 2013, 100 years after the construction began on this very new city. And it was also 100 years ago, last month, that the winning design for Canberra was announced. And the winner, of course, Walter Burley Griffin and Marion Marnie Griffin. So yes, today we're heading to the ACT to discover more about the competition to build Canberra, how the city was created, the city that was hoped for, the city that was built, and its heritage. So I'm joined today on By Design by James Werrick, who is a Professor and Director of Urban Development and Design Program at the University of New South Wales. He's also the President of the Walter Burley Griffin Society. Welcome to By Design, James.
Hello, Fenella.
Yes. Also with me is David Heaton, who is a Canberra historian and cultural consultant. He's also an advisor for the Centenary of Canberra and an advisor to Senator Kate Lundy. Welcome, David.
Nice to be on the show, Fenella.
Good to have you with us. And Sheridan Burke is joining us too on the telephone, a director of the Heritage Consultants, Godden Mackay Logan. She's president of the 20th Century Heritage Committee for the International Council of Monuments and Sites, which advises UNESCO. Welcome to you too, Sheridan.
Hello.
Now, David, if I could begin with you, because I'd really like to know a little bit about the creation, the background to the creation of Canberra. Tell me a bit about the national vision, the political vision for this new capital.
Well, it was probably where it started to really focus was as we got closer to federation, and it became clearer that we would that those six colonies would unite. It was the case that from the early 1890s, they had discussed the prospects of a capital, what it might look like, where it should be, and that discussion became a richer one as we got closer to 1901. And then once, Fenella, it was decided that the capital would be in New South Wales, and boy, what a story was there. Once that was decided, then it was a case of figuring out precisely where it would be, considerations of whether it should be near the coast, away from the coast, the cold climate myth, that notion that whites, you know, could lead the coloured peoples of the world best if they were born in a cold climate, ergo you look to the colder areas of New South Wales. And these started to coalesce, but in the context of a very rich international discussion about what had become known as the science of town planning.
So this was consciously then understood, David, as an opportunity to create a new kind of city, a very modern planned city.
Certainly a new opportunity. The idea, there were so many of the first generation Australian federal politicians who'd come from other nations, many of them from poorer circumstances. One thinks of Fisher, who was in the coal mines of Scotland, you know, when he was 8 and 9 years of age. Cook was the same. Prime ministers, but a number of the individuals who wanted the best for their country. So it was a mixture of both an elevated sense of the kind of national capital we would need, and also that Australia, this new nation, deserved the best, that they were aspiring to the best possible capital that they could put together.
So it was very much an international competition. So can we talk about the entries then? Because this is the bit that really interests me, David. Was there much interest from around the world?
There was considerable interest. There were problems. The main Minister for Home Affairs, King O'Malley, the American-born King O'Malley from 1910 to 1913, O'Malley was said that he would have the last call. That was built in as Minister. Well, that certainly raised the hackles of the planning community in Australia and abroad. And also that he, in the opening, it was not they did not name who the judges would be. So there were problems. But despite those problems, the formal number announced, Fenella, was 137, but my research in over the last year and two suggests as a virtual certainty that there are at least 200, and there might have been as many as 400. Now, most didn't meet the criteria, and above all, that they were not professionals from, if you like, the broader planning community. So they were hived off. But we still had, and a school teacher and so on, whose entries were in.
So it wasn't just architects or urban planners. Other people got in on the bandwagon as well. Just quickly, I go to Canberra now and then, and I look at it. I see what it is. It's Walter Burley Griffin, Marion Marnie Griffin. What other proposals were there? I mean, what else could we imagine? Were there very outlandish ideas?
Not so many outlandish ideas. I mean, the professional community right across the world got involved. We had 15 nations represented. You know, straight away when we look at first, second, and third, and that was of course controversial. But Walter Burley Griffin and Marion first. Eliel Saarinen from Finland second, and Agache from France third, and a number of the Americans in the shortlist. Ultimately, there was a shortlist of eight, and there was only one Australian design in that shortlist of eight. The other internationals, and of course, they were from the usual suspects, the countries of Great Britain, but you also had a very significant number of American entries, over 20, South Africans, Indian, you know, I mean, South American countries represented. It was genuinely international.
For sure. James Werrick and Sheridan Burke, of course, are my guests as well on By Design. And James, this might be a good opportunity to bring you in here because you are an internationally recognised expert on Walter and Marion Burley Griffin. So why did their plan, the Griffin's plan, make it to the top?
Well, I think that what's extraordinary about Canberra is for everybody who visits it today is to see the dramatic alignment of the geometry and the landscape. And I think that that understanding of the site and seeing its immense potential really sets the Griffin scheme apart. For all of the inherent fascination of the other entries, and David is correct, there's certainly some curious examples and some outstanding ones as well. But nevertheless, the Griffin entry is certainly ahead of everybody else. There's no question of it.
As David was saying, there were a significant number of entries from America. They came from Chicago, the Griffins. This is the place that was known as the home of the skyscrapers, so they didn't really propose that for Canberra, did they?
Quite the opposite. In fact, it was in many ways what they were offering was almost a critique of their own city, picking up a lot of its dramatic and exciting ideas, but reconciling them to the realities of their own existence in the progressive era of the United States, and aspects of the raw development realities of Canberra had created amazing social problems as well. And so the Griffins were imbued with a tremendous idealism to project an ideal city into a new democracy in the South Pacific.
So they were idealists, essentially, and this was an incredible opportunity for them to build a new city.
Absolutely. And there's no question that Walter had been thinking about it for many years, a decade or so. And then, of course, his recent marriage to Marion in that summer of 1911 created the team that could realize the depth of thought that Walter had brought to the whole idea.
Do you think that the right design won?
Oh, absolutely, yes, yeah. No question.
Do you agree, David?
No question whatsoever. The visionary design won, no question.
You said just quickly before I bring in Sheridan that, you know, there was only, was it one Australian entry? Is that right? Was there in this newly federated nation, though, a desire for an Australian design to win, David?
Well, there certainly was from some, and no, there was one in the shortlist. So you had 137 formally announced. That was ultimately reduced to 46, and then that was ultimately reduced to eight. And in that eight, one was an Australian entry, which, as James and I know, would become a rather mischievous entry, and that's perhaps for another story, another day.
Who was that very quickly?
It was Charles Coulter, Griffiths and Caswell. Caswell was the engineer, and he was the one who drove the entry, but Coulter is very well known, especially in Canberra circles, because of a splendid watercolour of a capital city at Lake George in 1901 that was the cover of the Congress of Engineers, Architects and Surveyors that took place in 1901. So Coulter was one part of it, Caswell and Griffiths. But Caswell was the driving force, and as I think one historian put it, it was a sort of clash in some ways of Chicago idealism and Australian pragmatism. And you'd have to say that what was ultimately the fourth place plan, the Australian, was certainly a representative of Australian pragmatism.
Certainly. Sheridan Burke is also my guest, and I want to talk about the heritage now. And Sheridan is a heritage consultant, and she's actually joining us on the phone from another heritage site, which is the Manly Quarantine Station in Sydney. Hi, Sheridan.
Indeed.
Now, in your opinion, Sheridan, is Canberra a city of world heritage significance?
Look, I think it's absolutely up there with the best of them. And when we look at the fact that we're currently processing Canberra for National Heritage Listing, we've already got our feet on the ladder of moving towards the World Heritage Listing. But I'd like to come back a little bit before and say, I think what we talk about so often about Canberra is Griffin and Marion and Walter and the work that they did in their idealism. But we've also got to look to people like Thorne, and we've got to look to the fantastic landscapers, Weston and Pryor, and the work that they did, because a lot of what we actually see today is that. We see the basic geometry that Walter and Marion gave us, but we see the landscape, we see a city in the landscape, and we see what other people gave us later on. Mm-hmm. Even the modernist Tolman coming along after the war, the Y plan, the work that the NCDC has done, all those layers have imbued Canberra with a particular significance, which is not just about its start, but about its whole 20th century experience.
Exactly. Many people that were involved in creating it. Just quickly, very quickly, I mean, how do you actually get considered for World Heritage Listing by UNESCO?
Well, step one is getting onto the national list as far as our country is concerned. Then it goes on to a tentative list. That tentative list is submitted to UNESCO. UNESCO then accepts that, generally speaking. Then a nomination dossier is prepared. So an analysis is done of what is the significance. As you might imagine, on the World Heritage List, there's some pretty rigid criteria. It has to be of outstanding universal value, and there's various criteria sitting under that that have to be met. Now, Australia's had a very good success rate in having our nominations go forward. Most recently, a couple of years ago, a series of sites that related to our convict heritage was inscribed on the World Heritage List.
Such as Port Arthur?
Port Arthur was one of them, Hyde Park Barracks in Sydney, Parramatta Park in Sydney, okay. Fremantle Jail, a whole series.
So but it is very competitive, isn't it, to get into the World Heritage Listing?
It's highly competitive. It's a very selective process. It is meant to be selective. It's meant to be the things that are of outstanding value. But if we look at Canberra, it really is one of the very few places, cities, entire cities built from scratch that reflect the 20th century. If we look at the kinds of things that are already on the World Heritage List, there's Brasilia, you know, a much later place, White City from Patrick Geddes in the 30s, Le Havre, those kind of places, all a little bit later. With Canberra, we see a very early planned city and really quite a unique one.
In terms of other planned cities, though, if Canberra is an early one, I mean, around the world, are there other equivalent planned cities?
There are. Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, was inscribed on the World Heritage List in 1987, a totally new plan from scratch in a greenfield site, effectively, in the centre of the country. White City, a new city under the British mandate in Israel for Tel Aviv. So, yes, there have been some that have started from scratch, but very few, and not so consistently as Canberra.
Okay. Thank you, Sheridan. James Werrick, just interestingly enough, I wonder whether or not you think that the Griffin entry for the Canberra competition, do you think it was utopian?
Well, I think it has a utopian dimension because it is projecting an ideal into an environment that the Griffins were imagining. And their understanding of Australia, of course, was filtered through the progressive press of their time. We must remember, of course, that Australia's reputation in the first decade of the 20th century was very much as a social laboratory with progressive social legislation across so many aspects of life. And the Griffins are picking up on this, and that they could see that...
What were they picking up on? What were the ideas?
Well, I think fundamentally the idea of making a constitution and making a new polity, and that resonates, of course, with the American experience. But what is really extraordinary about the Griffin vision for Canberra is it really is a manifestation in practical urban form of our constitution, of the way that our democracy was established.
So about belief in ourselves, sharing, as you say, democracy, things like that?
Well, no, the idea of the city really was that as you walked around it, you would understand your rights and responsibilities as a citizen, and you'd understand the relationship of yourself to the government and where the judiciary stood between the government and the people, and the High Court is one of the few examples of the buildings in the right place today. The executive at the apex of the triangle, all these types of ideas were intended to make the experience of being a citizen of a new democracy a real everyday part of life.
Mm. How much, actually, David, maybe I'll ask you this question. I mean, how much, I suppose, of Canberra today conforms to the Griffin Plan?
Well, James and I would have different opinions of that, but there is absolutely no doubt when you go to the top of Mount Ainslie and you look down, what is striking is the similarity in certain ways to that original vision that was put together by Marion and her team, the view from the summit of Mount Ainslie. Now, many of the buildings are not there, but you do see the Griffin City, as has been well documented. At the end of the day, not a single building is in the same location as it was originally. Certainly the civic area, the National University, and a few places, but no building. But at the end of the day, it is the symbolic weight of that original visionary design that is so important, Fenella, and I know Sheridan would agree with that, but ultimately we got layer on layer. Many would suggest moved away from the Griffin design, and there were certain elements that built on the Griffin design. But James is absolutely right. You are talking about important symbolic aspects of the city that I think at the end of the day are the most significant when you start thinking about national and indeed world heritage listing.
So, James, maybe as David said, you have different visions of this, but what's your opinion about it? Does Canberra today conform to the Griffin plan?
I think it has exciting dimensions of the Griffin plan. Certainly, the idea of the lake really transforms that valley up on the plains of towards the Monero, and of course the great axial alignments. A lot of the street pattern was laid out in the 1920s, and it's still marvellous to go around other parts of the inner parts of Canberra and find the alignments suddenly on Mount Majura or Black Mountain, and then in addition, I think the overall arching sense of landscape going through the city and the marvellous network of open spaces and public opportunities, and the way that now cultural institutions are sited within that landscape. And what we have to do in the next century, of course, is to give it the density and the intensity to make it a city charged with significance of everyday life.
Does it still have embedded in its design that the constitution of Australia that you talked about earlier? I mean, how we, you know, affecting how that we think about ourselves, like the Opera House maybe has done for us too?
I think that if, in a sense, it does, but it has to be. It really does have to be interpreted today, and we really need to set up a dialogue between the original idea and what we have built in a century. And that dialogue is a very rich and rewarding thing to be aware of, as I'm sure David would acknowledge, and Sheridan as well. So I think that although big moves like the way the Parliament House was cited were provocative and deviated from Griffin's idea, they in many ways, in a sense, comment back on Griffin's idea. So, in fact, we have built a conversation, which is, in fact, part of the original idea of democracy.
Certainly. Sheridan, we've just got 1 minute to go, very, very quickly. I mean, do you think Canberra will get its heritage listing?
You know, I think I'd like to see us have a very good go at it, yes.
Yes. And what's your favourite part of Canberra, Sheridan?
My favourite part, actually, I'll chime in on what James said. It's the lake. So the lake unifies the place. It gives us that wonderful vision that they had, and it gives it lots of places to go walk, sit, look at the cars. It's a wonderful contribution to our city.
James, in a few seconds, what's your favourite part of Canberra?
Oh, the courtyard of University House at ANU.
and David, yours, your favourite part?
Inside Aldo Jurgler's Parliament House, but I'd have to also throw in the top of Mount Ainslie and my own Mount Rogers out in the suburb of Melbourne.
Ah, there you go. Well, we'd love to hear from you, of course, as well, by design friends. What's your favourite bit of Canberra? You can leave your links on our website. And a big thank you to our guests, David Heaton, James Werrick and Sheridan Burke. All the links and information, of course, on our website as well. Thank you for joining me.
A pleasure.
And that is By Design for today. By Design is produced by Jan Ryan. Our sound engineer is Anne-Marie de Bettencourt, and I'm Fenella Kernebone.